Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Love Your Music. I'm Margot Joy-Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach, singer, songwriter, and the author of The Art of Living a Life You Love. I am excited to have Rolf Remlinger as my guest for Love Your Music today. Join us for a conversation about being a musician, teacher, performing, creating his three Emerson Barry Palmer Facebook group, and the 3.2 U.S. tour with Robert Barry. Hello, Rolf.
Hi, Margot. Happy Wednesday from beautiful New Hampshire here. The leaves are turning like crazy all of a sudden because it's just a beautiful fall day right here in New Hampshire. Heading to New Jersey today.
Wow. You know, I'll tell you what is that I have never been back east during the fall, and I just wanted, that's one of the things I really want to do someday is see all the colored leaves that there are back there. I've seen pictures, and it's just, it's so beautiful.
Well, and you know, Dwayne Farrell, he's here with me on the tour and stuff, and he's just taking pictures of everything, because you guys don't get that out in California, huh?
No, we don't. You know, in fact, in Marin County, where we live, It's amazing. I remember years ago during the fall going, I want to see some colored leaves and driving around looking for them. And we have a few of them here and there, you know, certain trees that are in certain spots that do change color. But you actually have to look, be on the lookout for them. You know,
yeah.
It's not like they're everywhere.
We drove the same road to Henniker because they did the two shows there. So we were there basically almost 4 days. And you could just watch the leaves were just changing and right in front of you. And they're saying that this is going to start being the height of the time, and all the leaves are changing, and we're getting invited to go apple picking all over the place. That's all they do here. So they apple pick. So
that,
but anyways,
is hysterical. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, oh my gosh, we have so much to talk about, and I know the time is just going to absolutely fly by. And I'd kind of like to start out a little bit with going past, present, and future in that order. And so tell us a little bit about you, how you got involved in music and teaching and, oh my gosh, all the different ways that you live your music. You are doing it in so many ways. So tell us a little bit about how that all started.
Well, I mean, you know, growing up, my parents, they were kind of you know, they wanted us taking music lessons. You know, they were German immigrants. They moved to America. I was born here, the first one of all my family. And but we all took music lessons. My older brother took guitar lessons. I actually wanted to play the accordion, if you can believe that. I don't know why I like the accordion. And maybe that's my German blood. I don't know. And and next thing you know, they're bringing a Farfisa organ home from the local music store. So I started taking organ lessons. And then my younger brother, he started taking drum lessons. You'd think we'd have become a boy band or something, but we didn't do that. I think we played at Christmas time once or twice, but you know. And so I just kind of grew up taking the organ lessons and piano lessons. And but I didn't play in band at school or anything. But I took a music theory class in school, and you know we all look back at teachers that really influenced us and had an impact on us. I'm sure you've had some.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we always hope as art teachers that, you know, we're able to do that with our students. And I just, we had that high school band director that taught us music theory, and he kind of recognized there were four of us in the class that really took to it. And I'm still friends with, you know, the Mazzatena brothers and Matt DiDonna, and we all took this theory class. And then we wanted to continue, but there was no theory 2 class. So, you know, the band director petitions the school board, and they kind of make some special arrangements. And we ended up getting Theory 2 lessons and you know, analyzing Bach chorales and working out of theory books that, you know, that were at the college level. So I think I like that analytical part, you know, like pulling the songs apart and seeing how everything works. And but I went off to college to be I went off to college to be a psychology major. And I started taking theory courses, and it was the same book that I used in high school. And so I was acing those classes. And then so I switched my major to music education and became a music teacher, and I've taught it all. I did 33 years of music. I taught band, orchestra, choir, general music. I started in the elementary, and I finished in the elementary. And, you know, I just, you know, when you're a band director, that is your life. All you do is music. You're at going to every football game. You're marching, you know, at contests. And, you know, I took the band to the Outback Bowl. And, you know, so, but I finished in elementary because I really like that age, you know, the kids, you can have a lot of fun with the kids. So, and,
what ages,
and that's,
you know, what grades would that include that you were teaching?
When I first started, I was teaching kindergarten through sixth grade in that building.
Uh-huh.
When I finished, we were a K-5 building. So I taught kindergarten through fifth grade. You know, but I love doing the middle school. I used to do guitar class and had a keyboard lab. That was so much fun. And, you know, but, you know, I was kind of like the pinch hitter. You know, every time something would happen in the department, they go, "Hey, Remlinger, you're going to do orchestra next year." Okay. You know, "Hey, Remlinger, you're going to be the head band director next year." And it's like, okay. So I always got kind of put in other positions. "Hey, you're going to be the choir director." And then, you know, and I would do it. And I would do the best job I could. You know, I maybe wasn't as qualified to be the orchestra director as some others, but I had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, you would do it. And, you know, then they might shift you around and stuff. When you're a music teacher, they can put you really in any position from K through 12. You know, I taught every single grade. So,
K through 12?
Well, I taught K through 12, yeah. I mean, I taught middle school. I taught high school. There are some districts, and I have some friends that do teach kindergarten through 12th grade every day. You know, if it's a small district, they might be at the elementary for some classes and then go to the middle school and then the high school, you know, do band there. I did middle school and high school all in one day. I did three buildings in one day.
That's
so
incredible.
I did a 4-5. Yeah, I know. I did a 4-5 building, and then I would do a 5-6 building, then a 7-8 building, and then I would be at the high school at the end of the day. Drive to three schools a day. So.
Well, you got plenty of variety. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But I did that
for
33 years. I retired this. Yeah. I retired this past May, and now I'm teaching at the university and music education class and supervising music teachers and trying to still do music. You know, I play in two bands and, you know, and do crazy stuff like follow Robert Barry around and other groups.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, one thing I have noticed about you, and I met you through you doing the three Emerson, Barry, Palmer Facebook page originally, but you always are having fun. And it seems like everyone around you is always having fun. And I just have to say, though, before we get on to the other conversations, when you were saying that about kindergarten through fifth grade and teaching music, Xander, our son, had this incredible, inspiring music teacher in his elementary school from kindergarten through fifth grade, named Mr. Giorzi, Mr. G. And, oh my gosh, he was so great with the kids. And so I can really visualize you there with all the kids in all the different ages and stages. And that is so cool.
And you're right. I love to have fun. My philosophy is if they're laughing, they're learning. Because if they're laughing, they're listening to you. You know, if I'm being silly, if we're having fun with the song, if the kids are laughing, they're learning, and I'm having fun too. I don't want it, you know, I could have kept teaching. I didn't have to retire this past
mm-hmm.
May, but after 33 years, and you know, I like to do a lot of other stuff. I want to try maybe some different things. I like to have fun. You're right. I like to keep everything positive on the page, much like you. You're such a positive influence, and how Robert, you know, presents himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to surround myself with positive people, and I do like to be happy. I don't like drama, you know, and having to deal with all that. So,
I totally agree. And the thing is that what you see with you and with Robert and with me is what you get, you know. I mean, we don't just pretend to do that. That's really who we are. My husband gets asked a lot of times by people, they'll go, is she really like this?
Yeah.
Is that really what she's like? And I have my moments where I freak out and where I have my human moments and, you know, get upset or sad or angry or whatever, but it doesn't last very long because I value having fun and I value kindness so much. And I've always loved that quote by Maya Angelou that says, "Remember, people will always remember how you made them feel." And you always make people feel good. Robert always makes people feel good. And that's my intention, is to make people feel as good as I can while I'm with them. So, you know.
Yeah, and you do. I mean, yeah, it's a gift. Good job.
Yeah. Well, I think we need more of that in the world for sure, you know.
We definitely do, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, let's focus on living our music and getting other people to live their music and not take life so seriously, right? And
yeah.
I just wanted to say I do want to play an original song of yours that I have queued up called Slow Day in City Traffic. And I was just thinking that in a way that kind of feels like the next thing to do because of the fact that we're talking about how people get so caught up in drama and not enjoying the moment and not having fun. And sometimes traffic can, you know, being stuck in traffic for a long time can really drive people crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that this music that you've created in this song, though, would be something great to listen to while you were in traffic or anytime.
Yeah.
I like listening to it just in my office or...
It has a little bit of an earworm. I hear people like humming the melody sometimes after they hear it. It's just an instrumental piece. So, you know, I wrote that when I was in college. When I first got into music, Margo, I was heavy into jazz. It was all about jazz. My first concert was Chick Corea and Gary Burton.
Oh.
You know, back in 1970. I really didn't get into progressive rock until, you know, 81, 82, you know, a little bit later in life. And I was into jazz, so at first I was studying jazz and writing jazz, and I recorded those two jazz songs while I was at college, and I have them copyrighted, you know, and through the government, and they have my cassette tape at the Library of Congress or however they do that, and I just always liked those because, again, I was a piano player, and I played in the jazz band, so that's me playing the piano. I'm also playing some congas and percussion. My friend Tom Freeze doing the vibraphones and the drum set, and a good friend of mine, Warren Edwards, on bass, and I love his bass solo in that song. So, yeah, I like that song too a lot. So, thank you for playing
it. I love
it. I love it.
It's like the more I hear it, the more I want to hear it. And you're right, I end up hearing it in my head afterwards, which is a good thing. You know, it's one of those songs where it kind of makes me feel happy, to say the least. So anyway, it's just under 4 minutes, and I'd like to play that song and then talk to you about it a little bit more. So Slow Day in City Traffic. Here we go. Oh, Rolf, I just love that song so much.
Ah, well, thank you.
I was thinking about it while I was listening to it this time, too, and especially with what we were just talking about being positive and having fun and enjoying life. And it just, it sounds like fun. It sounds like joy. It sounds like a positive, uplifting music that just reminds you, oh, hey, let's just enjoy the moment, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's certain songs that when you're driving in a car or in your car just seem to fit the mood of that. And I don't know why I came up with that title or how I came up with that title, but it just sounded like, I remember playing that song in a car and people were then kind of like humming along to it. Said, that's a good car song, because there's, some songs you don't want to listen to in a car. They'll put you to sleep. So
exactly.
That was a good one.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's one thing to have something that's sort of relaxing a little bit, but it has to be enlivening enough that you stay awake. Something that's going to bore you. And it's funny because while I was listening to it too, I was remembering us talking about breathe, smile, and have fun, which I always say before I do my shows, before I speak, sing, whatever I do. But that song, I kept hearing breathe, smile, have fun, breathe, smile, have fun during the music. It's kind of like, it's almost like a soundtrack to that reminder that for us all to be in the moment and to breathe, smile, and have fun.
That would be a good song title.
Yeah,
that's
there
you
go.
You got to work on. You got to write a song called Breathe, Smile, and Have Fun.
I love it. I love it. Okay, well, I'll have to work on that one with Dudley, my husband Dudley. And, how did you meet Robert? I mean, how did that all start? And was that before the three-page got started? I'm just kind of curious where he came into the picture.
That was actually a while before. And I'm thinking it was like 2006 or so. I was doing a project for Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, actually, for Tony Ortiz, the Emerson, Lake, and Palmer archivist.
Right.
There were some articles he wanted me to scan for him, some articles that I had. And then it basically became, hey, just scan me everything you have and send it to me, So I had to do, high-res scans of every magazine article, every newspaper article, any flyer that I had on Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. And and then I, he created a Dropbox page, and I would Dropbox him all that stuff. Well, in the process of doing that, I saw Three in 1988 in concert in Cleveland, and I had kept all those articles from that concert, the concert review, the interview before the concert, some advertisements from the concert, and I had scanned those. And, I just got thinking, whatever happened to this Robert Berry guy? I wonder, I didn't hear about him after that tour. And so I started looking, and this is, just checking things out on the internet. The internet. And I actually found his webpage at the time. It wasn't easy to find, but I found Robert Berry's webpage. And so I was reading all about him on that page and thinking, wow, this guy's, the tribute CDs. Yeah, I listen to those. And then I look back at them and I find his name in them. There was an email address to contact him. It was one of those AOL addresses. And I had an AOL address. I think we're the last two people in the world with an AOL address. So.
I think you
and,
are.
Yeah. And so I said, I'm going to send him an email. So I sent him a short email just saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. And I scanned these articles for you. I know the concert review one wasn't the most positive article, but it said some, good stuff that maybe you want to know. And so I attached those articles and sent the email. And I figured, I'll just probably hear something from his webmaster or I won't hear anything from him. And, the next day I check and I got this big, long email back from Robert Berry. And it's just the most positive email. He's just talking about what a great tour it was and how much fun they had and just how amazing Keith Emerson was and thanking me for sending the articles. And it was such a great time of his life. And, that's kind of what started it. We emailed back and forth for a little bit. And if you remember, AOL had the instant messenger. So we would, instant message each other and then talk a little bit about this. And, hey, did you see these pictures from Three? Oh, I've never seen those before. And, but then we would go, we'd go months or even years without talking to each other. And then I would find something about three and I would contact him again. And we would then go back and forth for a, you know, a week or so. And, you know, then another couple months would go back. And then in 2015, I noticed that three live in Boston CD was coming out. Rock Beat Records got a 2-record deal. Kind of, you know, Tony Ortiz had been pushing Keith to allow them to release some live three material, and Rockbeat came out with Live in Boston. And I noticed it getting a lot of traction on social media. People were really talking about that CD. And that's when I contacted Robert and says, hey, there is no three page. It's all Emerson, Lake & Palmer pages. It's all Progressive Rock pages. Would you like me to start a three page? And he said, yeah, go for it. I figured we might get 75 people in this on the page. You know, I was just hoping mm-hmm. that we would get 50 people on the page. You know, I mean, I don't know how many three fans. And then, oh, my gosh, the people came out of the woodwork. I mean, you've seen the posts. We've got mm-hmm. Carlo and Dwayne and all these people just posting stuff and finding pictures and advertisements that we didn't even, you know, Robert didn't even know existed. You've probably seen the pictures I recently posted from the Cincinnati concert. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you caught those. I mean, that's
I'm
just,
not sure
you know,
if I knew which one they were, but I see all the pictures that you post.
Well, you know, I'm going to a local concert, and a friend of ours from Cincinnati comes up and just hands me those pictures and says, I was at the Bogarts show at 3, Terry Eilerman, and she gives me the pictures. She didn't have time to scan them for me, so she just gave them to me, and I'm slowly scanning them and posting them on the Facebook page, and Robert's never seen them. And if you look back, it's probably the best picture of Paul Keller that I found from that 3 tour, where he's like out front in front of Carl's drum set, and it's uh-huh. a great shot of just Paul Keller. Usually, I mean, you know, Paul was, you know, those stages were small. He was usually tucked in behind an amp here or a drum set here, and Jennifer was off on the side of the stage here. I didn't see them in Cleveland that well. You know, they were kind of behind the band. Well, here uh-huh. he is in front of the band. It's a brilliant picture. And we were just looking at it yesterday at the, or 2 days ago at the LaFaro's house, saying that's Paul Keller. Yeah, that's what he looked like back then. Nobody really saw much of him. you know, in Cleveland, I'm hearing guitar and I'm wondering where's that guitar coming from? And, you know, from where I was sitting, I had to look almost like around the drum to find him. But, So I started the page, and it just took off. And, you know, we just keep it going. And you know, when you have a social media page, you have to kind of keep up with it and keep people engaged. And I was lucky enough that I would always check Facebook for my band page, and then I could just pop over to the three page and, you know, see what was happening and add content. And I do try to keep it positive, you know, and just try to keep things honoring the band, of course, honoring the men in the band, especially Keith Emerson and what they did and their contributions. And even though it was just like a one little album, I think, you know, it's got a little bit of a cult following. There's a group of people that understand that album. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because that was hard for those guys, because everybody was comparing it to Emerson, Lake & Palmer. You read the reviews. Oh, it's not Brain Salad Surgery. It's not Tarkus. Well, it's not supposed to be. It's three, you know,
I have to tell you that, excuse me, I've known Robert since the Hush days, he and Paul. And so, you know, I've seen him go through all these different things, and I always liked Emerson, Lake & Palmer, don't get me wrong. And Keith Emerson, I agree, is one of the most amazing keyboard players that there ever was. But the thing is, though, is that the three album, I actually like better than, I mean, there are definitely some ELP songs that are awesome and I love, but I love the three album. And so, you know, I think it's really sad that Keith didn't realize how good it was until just before he left the planet, you know, and it just, you know, to me, that's really, really sad. And I know that Keith was having a lot of trouble with his hands and not being able to play as well, and that was the thing that he knew how to do best. And I think that's one of the things that we all need to do, is we all need to be able to do more than one thing, because if we can do more than one thing, then we have other things to fall back on if that one thing is for some reason not available to us anymore. But, you know, my cousin Mike was the one that sent me the first. He first sent me a cassette of the three.
Yeah, cool.
Three album, but on on cassette. I can't. It doesn't even sound right anymore to say cassette, does it?
I know.
And then later I bought the CD, and then later my son was the one that got me a copy of the vinyl down. He got it. I think he found it. I don't think it was at Amoeba. It was one of the places down in Hollywood area, though, where he works. But, yeah, I love every single song on there. And I think that all three of them were amazing, Robert and Keith and Carl. And they were a wonderful combination. So, you know.
Yeah, I can still see going to the mall and buying that album for the first time. I bought the LP at the mall when it came out, and then driving up to, you know, going to Cleveland to see the concert. You know, that was a highlight at the Cleveland Agora. I wish I had a camera with me, because I've never seen a picture from that concert from anybody. And but I have the ticket stub and I have the memories. And then, I mean, I don't know if you know this story, but I met Keith Emerson after the concert. That was the first time I met Keith Emerson.
No, I didn't know
and,
that.
Yeah, well, it was weird because they came out and said the opening act is not coming tonight, so we're going to try to go to the Holiday Inn and get the boys out earlier, so to come and start the concert earlier. They were touring. I think they had a comedian opening up for them for some shows, and the comedian wasn't going to make it to that show. So my future wife at the time was working in downtown Cleveland the next day, so I took her to work, and I walked to the Holiday Inn. And I just kind of walked in the lobby and was standing around. You know, there was a bus in the parking lot. And I probably wasn't there 5 minutes. And the elevator opened up. Keith Emerson walked out. And I think Robert walked out with them. And it's just like, you know, at the time I was, you know, Keith Emerson, we had him on a pedestal. He was my hero. And, you know, so I kind of like, well, I want, if I can get his autograph. I didn't have a pen with me. So I went to the gift shop and bought a pen. I went to the restaurant and grabbed a menu card, like a little specials of the week, because the back of it was blank. And then I just stood behind Keith. He was just in line to check out at the hotel. And I stood behind him thinking, well, now what do I say? you know, I'm a musician. I'm a music student. I got all these amazing questions for him about, you know, all the songs he's done, his piano concerto and everything. And I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, excuse me, Mr. Emerson. And he turned around and we just started talking. And, of course, then I'm just talking like, you know, you're the greatest. And, you know, I loved your concert. You know, I kind of started to talk like a fanboy. So forget all the, you know, big technical questions I had. But he was so nice and we talked a little bit. The thing I remember, you know, I always had Keith Emerson on a pedestal. He was always on stage, you know, he was always this larger-than-life figure. And here he is in front of me, and he's shorter than me, you know. So I was expecting this giant of a man, you know, 6 feet tall standing in front of me, but he was shorter than me. But he was so nice, and we chatted, and we talked about, you know, he's going to Detroit next, and, you know, just talked a little bit about music. But, all the great questions I had for him just completely fell out of my brain, so... it was more just talking about the Cleveland show and that was it. You know, we shook hands. He signed that card for me. It's still hanging on my wall. And he got back in line to check out. You know, I tried to get Carl's attention, but he was making a beeline for the bus and said, he didn't have time. So he was going. And I don't remember seeing Robert after that. Again, I was kind of focused on Keith Emerson. Yeah, so 1988, I met Keith Emerson for the first time.
So did you actually meet Robert in person then, or was it later?
Nope, I did not meet Robert in person then. It wasn't until, you know, we've been doing all the internet stuff. He did a December People concert in Saginaw, Michigan, and I went to that December People concert, and I got front row center seats, and that's the first time I met him. And since then I've seen him with Greg Kinn a bunch of times, and we've, you know, hung out after the shows at the Hollywood Casino or something. So, you know, we've seen each other as often as we can. But the first time was at a December People show. So that's where I saw, or where I met him face to face.
That's really cool. You know, we only have 13 minutes left. Time is really flying by. And I've got Talkin' Bout, the first song on the Three, To the Power of Three album. And I think let's play that now. It's a little, it's just about 4 minutes, and then we can talk some more about that and all the rest of it right after. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I love that song.
I do too. It's one of my all-time favorites, and it's a great way to start the album. It's actually the first song on the album.
Yeah, that is fun. And I tell you, you know, they're doing that song live on this new tour. So,
yeah, we're starting to run out of time. So could you talk just a little bit about the tour? Okay, so you saw them twice already, and then you're going to see them again, what is it, Thursday, and then at Progstock? So.
Yeah, well, today, Wednesday night, they're playing. And then Thursday, they're in New York, and then Progstock Friday, Saturday. I'll be with them Sunday in Sellersville, and then I have to drive home to teach my class, but then I'll go see them in Kent, Ohio, Cincinnati, hopefully Indianapolis. I mean, I'm basically playing roadie merch guy limo driver this last past weekend in Henniker, and it was just an amazing show. When they did Desta La Vida, I had tears in my eyes. It was just brilliant. And for them to do Carnival 9 and to do Talking About, and then just to do a December People song. You know, Gary Peel showed up on Saturday and joined them for the December People song. I mean, here we are in the middle of October singing Christmas songs. It was brilliant.
Oh, I know. I've talked to Robert about that so many times, about how, because of the way they do it, it's, you can enjoy it any time of year. It doesn't have to be just at Christmas. But that is
yeah,
so cool.
Yeah,
I saw the pictures of Gary on your Facebook page for 3 Emerson, Barry, Palmer, right?
It's a great tour. The set list is just so amazing. And people, you know, they might think, oh, prog music. But it's not. It's got everything. And it's all the prog songs that you probably know and love, like Roundabout and Minstrel in the Gallery. And it's just such an amazing set list. And then Robert tells the stories in between. And Paul jumps in with some little quirky jokes here in between. And, you know, Jimmy is hilarious. And Andrew, same thing. Andrew is just a monster on those keyboards. I was watching him more on Sunday, just watching his hands and wishing I could take pictures of it or video of it or something. And just the musicianship and then the fun they're having. And then just hanging out with them afterwards, sitting around a fire, just, you know, passing potato chips around and meeting them for brunch. You know, the LaFaro Center of the Performing Arts, the LaFaros were just amazing hosts, just taking care of us and then feeding us and opening their home to us. And then, of course, their studio, you know, the barn is the Performing Arts Center. And, you know, we had a great crowd. So we had an awesome crowd both days. You know, I mean, Sunday was a little smaller, but it is Sunday and people, you know, maybe can't stay out as late, but there were actually a lot of people that came back on Sunday that were there Saturday. It's like they had to
I would have for sure. We saw them in Redwood City, the second show they did here in California, and somebody posted on one of the comments about the shows last weekend that it was something they were going to remember forever, and I totally feel the same way. And we're hoping that we can talk them into doing another show in California at the end of it because we want to see them again.
It would be
we can't go back east
of,
to do it. So, yeah, we'd love to have them do
circle.
Another one. Yeah,
so I think Progstock is going to be amazing, and I'm really looking forward to that. And then Robert's actually doing something on Saturday with Rachel Flowers. I don't know if you knew that he's going to do a special little short set with Rachel Flowers. And
I read about it.
So that's gonna...
I'm curious about that, too. Now, you know, it's interesting, the whole prog rock thing is, I have to say that so many people that I talk to don't know what prog rock is. And for people who know what progressive rock is, it makes sense. But I think it's important that we all say progressive rock more often than just saying prog rock only, because of the fact that then people get, oh, it's progressive rock. It has more keyboards, as Robert has said, he said that he and Keith didn't even like the whole prog rock thing, the name for it.
Greg Lake hated that. Yeah. He didn't like that label either. So
it seems to me working in the record stores, it seems like we called it more like classical rock or classic rock or something. I can't remember what it was exactly that we called it.
Symphonic
way back
rock,
then,
art rock, you know,
art
rock, symphonic rock.
Well,
whatever.
Robert had said melodic rock too, and that it's more keyboard based and that sort of thing. We only have 3 minutes left. So what would you like to leave our audience with? It has to be quick because we're going to run out of time pretty soon.
Well, first, I mean, just thank you and for doing this and of course, supporting Robert. And thank all his fans, you know, from Michael Sadello and Ed Morgan down in Florida, who just constantly post tons of humorous things but just add so much and keep supporting. You know, Michael and Ed came up to Henniker when the Emersons were here, Aaron and Ethan Emerson. And it's too bad they couldn't make it up for this show. hopefully they'll get to see one. And then just all the fans of the three page, thank you so much, you know, keeping it positive and post those pictures. I want those ticket stubs. And, you know, there's still a lot of newspaper articles out there that we can dig up. And, you know, and you know, just go to live, support live music. You know, I play
yes.
in two bands, and you know, I love my bandmates, Ken and Annette. And, you know, we play in a band called In a Jam. And, you know, we were just a cover band. But you know what? It makes so people so happy when we're, you know, playing. And I love seeing them singing along and clapping along and dancing along. So
exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the things about cover songs is that people know them, so they feel like they can sing along. That's one of the tough things about original songs.
Yeah.
With,
but
being in West Coast songwriters, we notice that. And it's fun, too. But the thing is that if people know the songs, then they feel like they can sing along with them.
Yeah.
And I feel
that's
like I can sing along with all the songs that they have in the concert, for example.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It makes
people
got to
go see the show. They need to go see the show if they can.
3.2,
you know,
featuring Robert Berry.
3.2. Yep.
With Andrew Collier and Paul Keller and Jimmy Keegan. What a combination. Thank you, Rolf, for all the ways that you love your music. And thank you, everyone out there, for all the ways you live your music. So
thank you, Margo.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you, and bye for now, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.